Hi, how are you? Hope everybody's okay. I hope you're all following the rules. And here we are. We're back at our same time, same station at 1 o'clock on Mondays for a half hour plus minus of Pirkei Avot, Hashkafa, and history. So the last time we met, we were in a discussion of a very famous but very complicated statement by the first century BCE, first century CE sage Hillel, discussing probably, I mean most likely, certainly that's how he was understood, discussing the various aspects, various issues that arise around one's attitude towards Torah study and in general about spiritual growth. The last part of, we're going to concentrate on the last little passage, last actually three words of the Mishnah. We're talking about chapter 1, Mishnah 13, where Hillel, after he discusses the fact that you have to grow and you have to and knowledge is cumulative, and that study is a not just a spiritual but not just intellectual but a spiritual necessity. For Jews and people too, but for Jews in particular. Finally, we come to the last three words: Udi'ishtamesh betaga chalaf. If you use, or he who uses the crown passes away. Now, one of the things about this Mishnah is that Hillel obviously thought, believed very passionately in the things that he is discussing, because every single thing he advises against or inveighs against he says he has all kinds of dire consequences that will happen as a result if you don't follow them. So, for example, if you don't do this, you're gonna die, or you deserve to die. I mean, it's very dramatic, very bombastic, and very extreme. I don't think he didn't certainly didn't mean that. We should go and kill somebody. What he meant is that these are really serious things, and we should take them as such. This is not just wise sayings. This is simply, as far as he was concerned, things that are life, in a certain sense, life and death. So, udishtamesh betagach halaf. What does that mean? If you use the crown, you should pass away, or you don't deserve to be on the scene. So here, it's very striking. It's really very striking that you have three or four very distinct and very different ways of understanding this Mishnah. And one begins to wonder, in fact, and it's not something I can, I tried, but I'm not sure what kind of answer I can give. When you have a series of different possible explanations of a pasuk or of a passage or a Mishnah, it doesn't really matter, and you choose one. Now, you'll choose one usually because of one of two reasons. Either because it fits the words better, because ultimately when you comment on something, you want to explain what you're studying. Either it fits the words better, or because there's something contemporary about the interpretation you pick. This is especially so if all of them, all possible interpretations fit. So why would you pick one over another? So here, I think the reason is because generally something's bothering you, or there's some reason you think that this one is the one that has the most contemporary impact. This is the one you have to use now. This is the one which speaks to contemporary needs and contemporary problems. I wish I knew, in each case, why one of these were picked by various commentators, and because they span the centuries and the... they spend the centuries and the and geography, but I have not been able to come up with an answer. But I think, however, that if we go through them, you'll see that for our purposes, every one of them has contemporary import, and I think that's even more striking in terms of sort of like the classical nature of these interpretations of the Mishnah. So, what is dishtamesh b'chatagach halaf? If you use the crown, you should pass away, or you deserve to die. So here, one is, and the obvious one, really the obvious one, So what I'm going to do with last, actually. But tishtamesh b'tagah chalaf, if you use the crown of Torah, then you really have no right to be. Now, use the crown of Torah clearly means not that you use it to know, not that you use it in order to be able to teach other people, because we saw that teaching is actually built in. We talked about this last week, that teaching is the other side of study. And as far as Jewish tradition is concerned, the minute you study, you have to teach. In fact, the best way to know something better is to teach it, because then you have to put it in words that somebody else can understand, and you'll understand it better. Okay. Here we're talking about a person who uses their Torah knowledge or their standing as a scholar for ulterior motives. There's all kinds of ulterior motives, and we're going to look at a few of them in a bit. But that's probably what he had in mind. You're doing all this study. Hillel is saying you're doing all this study, and you know all this stuff, and you're going to go out there and you're going to use it. Now, how are you going to and use it not constructively or in a way that's not legitimate? What kind of use are we talking about? So that we will talk about in the second half of the half hour. I found even more interesting because it was unexpected. You saw it was like a curveball. When I saw these interpretations vetted, and in circumstances that really I really wouldn't have expected. So one interpretation is ishtamesh betaga chalaf, if you use rabbis. In other words, you take those who are adorned with the crown of Torah. And then you use them and you exploit them. That's absolutely totally illegitimate. Why would you use? I mean, what do you mean to use rabbis? You can enlist them to front for your activities. I like to keep this sheer totally non-political. But the use of rabbis to advance all kinds of causes is a really, you know, it's a dicey operation. It's a dicey business. You're taking another person's credibility, and you're using it. Now, if you're using it for a good purpose, and you have a good cause, and you vote somebody who's a famous scholar, and he's known as pious, and you want him to endorse your product as a statement of credibility, then that's perfectly legitimate, because ostensibly the rabbi agrees with you too. But if you're using him as a front, and the person really doesn't know what they're doing, you're using their name or their signature, that is absolutely despicable. To use a rabbi to advance things which are not credible and not legitimate is a total exploitation. It's worse than exploitation. It's taking advantage. It's a form of betrayal. So that's one. I'm sure we can all think of examples. That's one way of looking at it. Or the ishtamesh bataga, people who are themselves a scholar, and they take their standing. And they use it for purposes which are not kosher. They're not proper. Similarly, such a person has betrayed everything they stand for. Because there's a difference between a Talmid Chacham or a Talmidah Chachamah and a Rav who teaches Torah and a professor, or an intellectual. We have no moral expectations of, you know, people that are experts, okay? We have no moral expectations of a professor of chemistry that he's going to be a moral person. We really don't care if he's a moral person. We care how good a chemist he is. And the same thing is true with political science and even doctors, as long as they're good doctors, do we really care what kind of person they are? I don't think we never asked that question. When it comes to being a rabbi, it's a whole other ballgame. Because everything you do reflects on the Torah, and the Torah is much more than just a form of a corpus of knowledge. It's God's word. You're supposed to reflect. You're supposed to be godly in the way that you behave yourself. And as a result, if you use your standing for something which is going to make the Torah look bad, never mind yourself, which you're not allowed to do. We talked about this as well. Then forget it. Chalaf. You're gone with the wind. The way that they translate "gone with the wind" in Hebrew is chalaf im haruach. It's passed away with the wind. Okay. So, ditshtamesh b'tagah chalaf, if you use your own standing. So you have to know exactly what you're getting yourself into if you have a standing, if you people respect you as a religious Jew, or certainly as a Talmid Chacham. There's a famous story about Bertrand Russell, who was a famous philosopher and also a mathematician. He was at Harvard at one point in his life, and he started had an affair with a married woman who was actually married to one of his colleagues. And he was called on the carpet by the president of the university. And he said, how can you do this? He says, why do you care? I mean, this kind of doesn't affect my teaching at all. So the president of Harvard had said to him, but you're a professor. We have you here visiting as a professor of ethics. And Russell is reputed to have said, and if I were a professor of math, would you want me to be a triangle? That's Dishtamesh B'Tagah Chalaf, following this line. Okay. Interestingly, there's another way of looking at this. Dishtamesh B'Tagah. Notice we're not talking about the Torah per se. We're talking about people who represent the Torah. I find this really, really interesting that even though the simple meaning of the line refers to the Torah itself, here we're talking about people who represent Torah. So there's another line of interpretation which says Dishtamesh B'Tagah, if you are a teacher and you take advantage of your students, in other words, those who are studying Torah, then you're despicable. How would you do that? First of all, certainly there are many and varied ways that a person can take advantage of their students. One can be arrogant and insist that people work for them and do for them and stuff like that. So that's certainly one way of doing it. Listen, we've all been unfortunately aware over the past 20 years, and it didn't start then, it's just we're now aware of this. We're very much aware of the fact that there have been learned people who have in fact betrayed the trust of their students and abused them. Whether it's a matter of sexual abuse, whether it's a matter of physical abuse, whether it's a matter of emotional abuse, whether it's a matter of developing cult-like characteristics and exerting authority over them in an irresponsible way. Look, a student is always dependent on the teacher. It's always like every teacher has that responsibility because the student is not just going to coming to you, especially if you're a rabbi or a talmidei chachamim, you have talmidim and talmidot. They're going to come to you not only for information, but they're going to come to you for personal guidance, and that's perfectly legitimate. On the contrary, you know, the Torah is not just a book; it's far more than that. But you have to be able to be sure that you know that you have a it comes with tremendous responsibility, and far too many. It's very tempting to. Take advantage of that responsibility to use your Talmidim for your own personal satisfaction, for a power trip, or even to do your errands. We're going to pass into another direction in terms of this Mishnah. Now here already you get into a very serious very important distinction and an area which shows just how gray this type of thing is. Listen, exploitation is always also. Exploitation is always wrong. But the truth of the matter is that there is also a mitzvah to l'shamesh talmidei chachamim, to serve and to help scholars. That's a way of showing them honor. I mean, one of the mitzvot in the Torah is to honor Torah scholars. So when a great Torah, not every Torah scholar, but when a great Torah scholar walks in the room, one stands up. When your teacher talking to your teacher, you don't teach to speak disrespectfully, and you don't cut them off, and whatever the case might be, that's there is a mitzvah to fear Talmidei Chachamim, and there's a mitzvah to love Talmidei Chachamim, assuming that they deserve it. So therefore, you're doing something nice for yourself. And developing more of an intimate relationship with the teacher when you serve them. I remember in my day in Reb Soloveitchik's class, there was one student who his job was every day he would come in and he would clean Rabbi Soloveitchik's classes. So that was his thing. Other people would drive him. To be the Rebbe's driver is a very big deal, because it means that it's like being a secretary. You have a relationship, and it's sort of like more intimate, and it's more warm, and it's more familiar. So that it's actually something you strive for. I was Rav Soloveitchik's driver for one summer, and it was a privilege and an experience I'll never forget. On the other hand, comes with the shtamesh b'tagach halaf to say, yeah, but you know what? You have to know how to balance that. You have to know what's too much and what's not enough, and what's acceptable and what's not acceptable. And that takes the development of tremendous sensitivity. And the story over here is to live in the world of sensitivity, because the world is not black and white. One of the problems in contemporary society is we are binary. You're either all this or you're all that. And that ain't the way things work. That's not the way the world works. The world is full of nuance, and the world is gray. Reality is gray. So similarly over here, if you have students and there are those whatever, you should, you know, you can, if they want to serve you as another way to make themselves available to help you in whatever way possible, you know, on the one hand, you don't want to deny them their possibility of treating you with respect. You have to be ready to get respect. That's another thing. We'll talk about that in a minute, perhaps. But on the other hand, you got to make sure not to overdo it. And knowing what the line is between the two is very, very difficult. It really is very difficult, but it requires that we do the work to be able to know where that line runs. And it'll be different with every single one of them. If this is the interpretation of the Mishnah, then what Hillel is saying is that he apparently saw a situation in which rabbis or colleagues were way too self-indulgent. They were more than happy to have their students come and serve them and bring them and food and all kinds of whatever, and you know, they were getting off on this kind of deference. And that's what you have to avoid, because it's at that point the question is, why am I receiving this? Am I receiving this because of my Torah, and I realize that's a responsibility on my part? Or because, I'm a big shot, so therefore I deserve it. There's a very big difference. And that's I think, what this line of interpretation has in terms of who the Taga is. As I said before, however, the most straightforward interpretation, and one of the reasons why I think it comes at the end of this Mishnah, because don't forget, it starts off, we start talking about studying and keeping up on one's studies and making sure that the importance of learning Torah, and as I said, now knowledge is cumulative. So when you get to that, when the whole process is finished, or you've gotten to a series of achievements, a series of accomplishments, then what happens is that, I'm a big shot. So what happens if your motivations are mixed? What happens if your motivations are People are complicated. People are complicated, and a certain amount of healthy narcissism is always good anyways, right? what happens if a person decides they want to be a scholar, not just because they love the Torah, which they may very well, but because, you know what, they like being called, they like being looked up to, and they like being called rabbi, and they like having people stand up for them, and they like sitting up on the bima. I mean, I don't know, whatever the case might be, or they like that people approach them. You know, it might just be a matter of I want to be needed. You know, you might have taken a psychological test, and you know, and comes out you're outer directed to the nth degree. Whatever the case might be, it serves a personal need. So if I get something else out of it aside from just being a scholar and doing mitzvahs and being a saint, so. And I use my Torah for that too, or I get something else out of it. So, is that legitimate? Is that illegitimate? Is that also gone with the wind? If I see a person really likes the fact to say, "Oh, Rabbi, I loved your," you know, "Rabbi, I loved your sermon. I didn't know you were. It was brilliant. I didn't understand a word." I mean, is that what are you? Is that legitimate or not? So here, it's interesting. Here it's interesting. There are really very sharp differences of opinion on this question. Of course, we all want everybody to be good. I wanted to say a narcissist, not an optimist. No, an altruist. We all want everybody to be altruistic. Oh, you know, I'm totally self. Not self-denying, I'm solely selfless, I do this just for everybody else, I do this for my ideals, I don't really know about. There are people who are very saintly, but most people are not saintly. Most people have a mix, and they want to be liked, and they want to be admired, and you know, we push it to the end. You don't have to live your life according to how many likes you get. I mean, I like the fact to see that 300 people or so watch this year every week, but a big part of that is because we talked about this last week. I love to teach, and I like it when more and more people hear what I have to say and engage with me and ask me questions. I love when you ask questions, by the way, and make comments. I look forward, for example, I don't know if Carol's on right now, but I look forward to her questions and her observations every single week. So we're all the mix. So if you're a mix, is there room for less than perfection? So if you look at the words, ishtamesh b'tagah chalaf, any untoward use of your Torah, of your knowledge, is exploitation and therefore gone with the wind. That's pretty heavy. So the truth of the matter is the rabbis were less. Hillel might have been a bit more doctrinaire, which is interesting because Hillel is usually the guy who goes with the flow, right? He's the guy that he's known as the one who's very patient, and he used to greet everybody nicely, and he wasn't so strict with people that visited him. So it's all very well and good, but the truth of the matter is that the statement is pretty harsh. The rabbis in Psachim, in a lot of places, actually four or five places in the Shas, note that there are two traditions. That there are two traditions that seem to contradict each other, and they may very well. One is Kol Atom Lomed Torah Shelo Lishma, Noach Lo Shelo Nivra. If a person learns Torah not for its own sake, but because of stuff he'll get out of it. Now the question is that only for something? Is it you're only doing it for what you'll get out of it, or that you'll get something out of it as well? It's also questionable. Better he shouldn't be born. And in another place, it says a person like that who's looking for what's in it for him or for her, the Torah is not an elixir of life, but an elixir of death. It's a poison. That's pretty extreme. That goes with Hillel. On the other hand, there's a famous statement that is attributed to Rav Yehuda, at 2nd century Amora in Babylonia, student of both Rav and Shmuel, for those of you who are familiar with the genealogy or the chronology of the rabbis of Bavel, that kol halamed, that la'olam yilmad adam lishma, I'm sorry, la'olam yilmad adam shalo lishma, shemitoch shalo lishma ba lishma, that, you know what, if you're going to study and you have ulterior motives, better you should do that. better you should do that, because from if you do it well enough, you do it extensively enough, eventually you will do things that you will study Torah for its own sake. So, in other words, if you have ulterior motives, that has value. Has value because maybe someday you'll end up doing things for, selflessly. But in addition, at the same time, study that has mixed motives may very well be legitimate. Because you have, so the mixture is not necessarily disqualifying. In my people who know me are going to be a little bit surprised at this, but over the past 6 months or so, I had the occasion of going to an online Tanya class with my brother-in-law, who's a Lubavitch rabbi in Detroit, Rabbi Chaim Moshe Bergstein. So people who know me as a dyed-in-the-wool Litvak might be a little bit shocked. But anyways, one of the things that the Tanya, which is the foundational text of Lubavitch Chassidus, has is that the person to whom the whole book is aimed is the person who's the Beinoni, the person who has mixed motives and has mixed factors in their life. Now, it's us, the normal person, the average guy. So how do you put these? So are these two absolutely, unreconcilable positions where if you have anything which is self-interested, you've destroyed yourself? Or, no, it's okay, you can have a mix, it's all right? So the Tosfot, Tosafists in France, in France, said no, both sides are correct. Hillel's correct, and also the more moderate position is correct. And they say as follows: if you are a scholar, if you know stuff, and this is true not just to Torah study, it's true for everything. If you know something, and you're studying, and you're doing stuff, and you're teaching in order to beat the hell out of somebody else, in order to show just how big a big shot you are, make the other person feel bad or feel stupid, then such a person doesn't really, that's gone with the wind. Dishtamesh b'tagah halaf, a person who uses the crown to beat somebody else up, later on, Hillel is going to say in a different version, don't use the Torah kardom lach porba. Don't use the Torah as an axe to chop with or to dig with. We'll see, that may mean something else as well, but here it means don't use the Torah like an axe and cleave your friend's head with it because he's a nobody and what the hell do you know? And there are plenty of people like that. There are plenty of arrogant people like that who will use their language, say, what right do you have an opinion? What right do you have to open your mouth? What right do you have to say anything? I'm a big shot. I studied here and I studied there and I know this and I know that and so on. We've all met people like that. That's samachayim. That when you do that, that's turning Torah into poison. That's a person better they shouldn't have lived, been born. However, a person who, he's a normal individual. He's a person who likes it when people respect him. He likes being called rabbi. He likes being called mora. She likes being called mora. She likes being called rabbanit. But at the same time, she loves learning. She loves teaching. That's not illegitimate. That's not exploit. Dishtamesh does not mean if you use the Torah. It means if you use the Torah exploitatively, if you exploit the Torah to advance a bad cause, if you use the Torah to advance maybe politics, I don't know, if you use the Torah per se in order to take advantage of students, to exploit students, if you use the Torah to exploit your standing in order to be able to get something out of it, whether it's a matter of discount or something, whatever the case might be, that's chalaf. Dishtamesh b'taga, you've caused the crown to be tarnished. Sorry about that. To be tarnished, then chalaf. Then chalaf im aruch. But if your basic orientation is to do the right thing and to share your learning, and as a result you get something out of it, that's perfectly legitimate. In fact, that's what normal people would do. Okay, with this, we have completed this Mishnah of Hillel, which only took us a month. I look forward to seeing everybody next week. Please leave questions. I'm posting this. This shiur is going to be posted on my Facebook page, my story. It's always at Tel Aviv International Synagogue, and also in on Instagram and Twitter and on my YouTube channel. So if you want to go back to listen to it or recommend it, I thank you very much to do that. And we will see you. Bye. Take care of yourselves.